We're in a brave new world, gentlemen. The world of iOS emulation. One way or another, we're all emulating now. I mean, I think Federico probably has access to some EU-specific stuff, but obviously the App Store rules were changed, and now we all have emulators. I've been mostly using Delta. I've been downloading all of the emulators as they come out because a bunch of them have been disappearing.
You never know.
Exactly. So I've been using Delta, and I've played through Pokemon Heart Gold.
You finished Pokemon Heart Gold.
I mean, okay. There's like, what is finishing a Pokemon game?
Like the story.
Story's done, and I've actually, spoilers for Pokemon Heart Gold, I've gone through and beat all the Kanto gyms too. And I caught Mewtwo.
Nice. Spoilers from 20 years ago, but okay. Yeah.
So you know, and I think I'm probably done with this game now, because I've never really, especially in my adult life, been particularly interested in catching them all. You know, and so I feel like I've kind of maybe reached the end of my journey with Pokemon Gold. And so, like, now I'm trying, like, for me, like, I'm wondering what to play next. I'm not sure. I'm looking for some recommendations, if you have them or if our listeners have them, for DS or Game Boy games. I started playing Animal Crossing Wild World.
That's a good one.
And I feel like I need to actually play it more. I don't like that the main screen is the bottom screen, which is, just feels weird to me.
I got to ask, which device are you playing this on?
On my iPhone.
And that's a 6.7-inch, right? One of the big ones.
Pro Max, yeah. Playing on my
Pro Max. Of course, always Max. What about joystick?
So, it depends. Sometimes I've been playing just using the virtual buttons, which for Pokemon is perfectly fine.
Wow.
Like, you know, and this is like when I'm like on the train or whatever, like which is just such an incredible thing to be on the train and playing Pokemon, like on my commute. It's like, oh, incredible. But at home, I've been using the Razer Kishi Ultra.
Nice.
Which is really, really good.
I bought one of those and returned it.
Is it the new one?
No, it was the one before. But the reason I returned it was not because I didn't like it. It was perfectly good. But because a sane friend reminded me that to play emulated games, I already had a Steam Deck. So what was I doing?
Yeah. I think it's easier to play these games on iPhone now because, like, they're just apps, right? Where, like, in Steam Deck, you still have to do a bunch of stuff to get, like, the Steam Deck running on emulation. But also, I don't have my Steam Deck with me all the time. My iPhone's with me all the time.
And that's a great answer.
Right? Like, I can just jump into Pokemon when I'm on the underground.
Yeah.
I have thoughts about all of this. Okay. So obviously, like I am sort of in the middle, because on one hand, I think there's something special about playing these old games on original hardware, and so I've been sort of approaching this from two different perspectives. I've been building up again my collection of old games with original hardware, so like an actual GameCube. A Game Boy Advance, a PS1. Like, I've been trying to be in a place where if I want to, I can either play games on original hardware and also digitize those games using like homebrew software on original hardware. So like ripping a DS cartridge on a modded Nintendo DS or ripping a GameCube game on Nintendo Wii and so forth. There is something special about like actually playing a game from 20 years ago on the console from 20 years ago. But at the same time, there are so many benefits these days to emulators that you have on your phone. And not just because it's not just the access, right? Oh, it's easy to use. I mean, it's also that, like, you're just on your phone, you grab your phone, you're playing a Nintendo DS game. You don't need to carry an actual Nintendo DS with you. And you have a better screen that is brighter, that is more legible. It's not just that, though. It's the fact that emulators have a lot of quality of life improvements, like being able to save your progress whenever you want instead of just having to use save points or checkpoints. Like, you can just save your state and load your state. And it's also like the upscaling features that these emulators have. So like, instead of having to play on a 480 by 320 display, that is super pixelated and maybe not even backlit. So it's like you cannot even play in the dark. Here you can upscale, you know, with pretty accurate pixel fidelity, a game on a phone or even on an iPad, and it's going to look incredible. So yeah, like I see the benefits of both systems, but I think there's a reason why emulators are just popping off on the iPhone, and that is you can play those games on incredible displays. Like Apple makes some really, really nice looking screens, and you have pretty good performance, and we can get to that for certain emulators, and they're always with you. So like that combination of these three things, I can see why like people are really into that now.
A friend of mine, David Eastman, has been talking about this phenomenon recently, and he's heavily technology based, does a lot of writing in all kinds of spheres related to technology. And he makes the point that the further we advance, not only is the emulation of these original platforms improving, but the actual original content is improved by the latest standards and emulation. Yeah. And the things that the three of us talked about a few years ago that were missing from these older games were A, the quality of life features offered by being able to save a game at any point, and B, the controller issues, because the original controllers weren't always great. And now, of course, we have an absolutely massive choice of controllers. So I'd argue that these games are now better than they've ever been. And that's just weird to me. Yeah. Weird, but nice.
I mean, like, the screen is a huge difference. So it's just like, for me, playing Heart Gold on my iPhone, the game looks better than it did on my DS, right? Like, the colors are better. It's like in the same way of, like, I know it's not emulation, but, like, playing Game Boy games on an analog pocket is a better experience because the quality of the screen is nicer. It has a backlight, you know? Like,
and that's got the advantage of being FPGA, so it's actually completely emulating the hardware.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's really interesting.
Yeah. And I think like this, the part about emulation that I think we need to keep an eye on is like, it's fine for old Nintendo stuff, for Game Boy games, for Sega Mega Drive games, or like really, really old, like much older consoles and computers. But it gets trickier when it comes to slightly more modern consoles. And by slightly more modern, I mean like the 2004, 2006 era, like GameCube and PSP emulation, for example. Those consoles, if you want to go beyond the limits of the original hardware, and in the case of the GameCube, even if you want to play at the base resolution, like the original resolution of the GameCube, which is 480p, I think, you need just-in-time compilation. And by not having JIT on iOS because of Apple's restrictions, now that emulation becomes basically impossible. That is the reason why Dolphin doesn't exist on the App Store at all, because those games are unplayable without JIT due to the architecture of the GameCube and how even if you have an M4 in your iPad Pro, all the power you throw at it, it still doesn't beat the benefits of recompiling that code just in time, you know, instead of having to translate the CPU on a different computer. Mm-hmm. Like, it just doesn't work. And even if you want to, like, for an article that I published today, I tested emulating PSP games on an iPad Pro. Now, you can double the resolution of a PSP. So you can play at 1080p, for example, on iPad Pro, and everything is mostly fine. But the moment you go beyond 1080p, so even if you want to do 3x or 4x, now the iPad Pro with the M4, because it lacks just-in-time compilation, it's going to start struggling. So your audio is going to get cut off, your frames are going to drop, and the game slightly but surely, like slowly but surely, becomes unplayable. Mm-hmm. Now, for context, on a Steam Deck or on a Lenovo Legion Go, and I'm sure you can do the same on even cheaper Android-based handhelds, I can do like 8 times the resolution of a PSP. I can play those games at 4K 60 frames without any problem. And that is because those platforms have access to JIT and PPSSPP, which is the PSP emulator that is also on the App Store. On Windows and on Android, it can use JIT. So I think it's going to be interesting to see if Apple pays attention to this and if they somehow find a way down the road, maybe later this year, maybe next year, to grant those emulators proper access to, you know, just-in-time compilation to have even better performance. That'll be an interesting story to keep an eye on.
I don't think they'll ever do it.
Yeah, it's
a console thing as well, you know? It's the whole security thing. Mm-hmm. Consoles have been the same way for ages, which is why you end up with so many remasters, right? They just don't permit it because of the potential security issues.
But what about the fact that, I mean, I think the reason this has become so complicated is that JIT is now on the iPhone and third-party browsers.
It is in the EU. If you are a third-party browser and you want to use your own engine and you don't want to be based on WebKit, you can request and you can be granted a JIT entitlement by Apple, but only in the EU because of the DMA. Mm. In fact, the Dolphin developers, the developers of the iOS fork of the Dolphin emulator, so this is GameCube and Wii, they actually requested a JIT entitlement to Apple, even if they're not obviously a web browser. And of course, they got denied by Apple. Because like, no, this is like a web browser only, EU-only feature. You cannot get access to it.
Why is it that they would allow it for a web browser that would give you absolutely unlimited access to content from absolutely anywhere, including some of the most dodgy places, and not for something like a games emulator, which is likely to be running code that's been checked all over the world by millions and millions of people?
Because regulators aren't making them.
Yeah, because that's the EU asked and Apple had to do it. Yeah. So... obviously, I don't think the EU is going to go to Apple and say, hey, Apple, we need to play Dolphin with GameCube games and JIT on the iPhone.
Honestly, like, though, Federico, at this point...
It could happen.
It could happen. Like, I've kind of ruled out anything. Like, I've not ruled out. Like, I will not rule out anything anymore. Like, there could be a scenario where... the right person complains to the European Union and they end up saying, hey, you know what? They should be able to do this. And then and we'll see. Like, do we imagine we'd have... on whose bingo card was game emulation on iPhone this year?
No one.
Exactly. So I don't know. Who knows? Have you guys been trying out other emulators?
I have.
Okay, what have you been on to?
So I've been... playing with a distribution called Exodos version 6, which I'd only heard of because I stumbled across some YouTube video recently. Never heard of it before. And this is a collection of 7,000 boomer PC games from the MS-DOS era. So we're talking about late 80s, early 90s, that kind of time. And this an absolutely massive distribution that you download via torrent. And it uses a system called Launchbox, and it wraps it up in a very nice, pretty way. And all of the benefit of this for me is that every single one of these PC games seems to be configured really well. I remember one of the issues I used to have with trying to get older PC games to run on DOSBox and that kind of thing was just how messy and varied the configuration issues seem to be with each game. But this seems to do everything. Every sound card, every video card, every kind of monitor configuration you could hope for. And there hasn't been a single game that I've tried that hasn't worked, including games that I'd worked on decades ago with my friend David Eastman. For example, his game Floor 13 had some music I'd written back in 1990, that sort of time, that I wrote for an LAPC1 sound card. It's a Roland sound card. Mm. And I'd not heard it since. Mm. And I was able to hear it absolutely perfectly, flawlessly. Every single one of these games is a zip file, so every time you launch a new game for the first time, it will unzip it and then run it. It's been brilliant. I mean, I've managed to play Turrican 2, the famous Amiga game. There was a PC version of it, and it seems to be absolutely 100% accurate.
You're playing really on impressive. PC.
Yeah. It's just wild.
Are these games playable on other devices? Like, or is it, like, what is the system in which they are being played? Like, is it
a PC?
Like, no, but, like, is it a specific emulator that you're using?
So underneath, it will use whichever emulator is best suited for that game.
Right.
That's the hard work that it's done for you.
Okay.
Most of the ones that I've played so far use DOSBox.
Right.
But there are other emulators that it uses, and each one is configured correctly for every single game. So they've done the dirty hard work of going through all these games and working out which emulator to use, which configuration to use. In the old days, you had all this crazy stuff like EMM setup and all these extended memory managers, and then all the sound card mapping and all of that had to be worked out. And of course, PCs were an absolute nightmare for sound card compatibility, but it seems to handle all of them flawlessly. Really impressive.
Huh. Yeah, I checked out RetroArch on iOS, which is also like a very popular emulator for other consoles. Like RetroArch is just basically everywhere. I do find the interface kind of confusing. There's a lot of different settings that you need to enable and configure for different emulator cores and different settings. So I do prefer, I very much prefer the native feel of Delta. Also because like I don't need to emulate old arcade games, which is RetroArch has excellent support for those types of like really, really old arcade machines and that kind of stuff. I have been playing with the iPad version of Delta, which is not yet available. There's a beta. Via the Patreon, I think. If you pledge in the, if you are like if you enable the pledge system in Alt Store Pal, which is the alternative marketplace, you get a link to install a test flight version of Delta for iPad, and I gotta say it's incredible. They took advantage of this really like not so popular developer API to basically turn the virtual controllers for any platform supported in Delta, so like the SNES or the Game Boy, for example, those virtual controls are a keyboard. They're like a custom keyboard on iPadOS, and I don't know how they've done it, but basically you can even play in split view and in stage manager with the keyboard shown, and the keyboard is actually a controller. It's wild. Like, obviously, it doesn't surprise me that they figured this out because, you know, those guys are clever. They know how to do these things. But yeah, but I've been playing Chrono Trigger, which, fun fact, I actually ripped my own cartridge of Chrono Trigger and I imported my save file from the cartridge of the Super Nintendo game onto my iPad, and I imported both the game and the save file into Delta, and I picked up exactly where I left off on the physical game, just in an iPad window. It's, man, what a time to be alive, really.
This episode is brought to you by Celtrios, the shoot 'em up game of a tiny ship, big weapons, waves of foes, power-ups, and obstacles. Celtrios has no ads, no in-app purchases, no subscription, and nothing is locked. It's only for Apple platforms, and you can get it on your Mac, your iPhone, your iPad, and Apple TV. There are 13 stages of the game, and you can start from any of them. Plus, you can resume play later if the app is quit. There's a lot to love about Celtrios. You have a ton of ways to play with customization to keep things fresh, like ship configuration, dozens of abilities. You can get Mac full screen options, randomizing, and a hard mode. Plus, there's a huge high-quality soundtrack for over 45 minutes of music. And the game keeps expanding. There have been over 83 updates to Celtrios so far, and the entire thing is made by an independent developer. You can play solo or grab a friend for two-player, and your Mac supports various inputs, or grab a controller if you're on iOS. If you love traditional shoot-em-ups, or you just want a high-quality game that is fun to play again and again with none of the annoyances that other games will have, Celtrios is for you. The Mac version is on Steam, a free demo, and the iOS and tvOS versions are in the App Store. Go to kevingrant.name/apps to learn more, or you can click the link in the show notes to let them know that you came from this show. That is kevingrant.name/apps, or click the link in the show notes. And the game is spelled Celtreos, Celtreos. Our thanks to Celtreos for their support of this show and Relay FM. Federico, you published an article on Mac Stories, and part of it includes your adaptation of the new iPad Pro for your MacPad system, which I recommend people go and read about. But you are talking a lot about using the iPad Pro as a gaming display. And the main thing you're focusing on is game streaming, I think. Yeah. Like, and you're doing a lot of game streaming. I think, is it GeForce Now mostly? And Moonlight? It's both,
It's GeForce Now to stream from the cloud and Moonlight to stream from a local network, yeah.
And when you've spoken about this stuff before on this show and in articles, and especially when I read it here, the thing that I'm struck by is I feel like we have very different experiences with game streaming. Where like I feel like I've never had an experience that I would call truly good.
Really?
Yeah. I always feel like there's an element of lag, and maybe I just don't have the good hardware, you know? But I'm never truly happy.
I have recently upgraded to a set of Wi-Fi 6E gaming routers. And those have been absolutely incredible in terms of just sheer bandwidth and reception inside the house. So there's part of that. Like, if you have access to Wi-Fi 6E, I cannot recommend it enough. And I've never played with Wi-Fi 7. Supposedly Wi-Fi 7 is even better, but no Apple devices currently support Wi-Fi 7. So 6E is the maximum you can get. I have been playing both with GeForce Now, which is streaming from the cloud, and Moonlight, which is streaming from a local gaming PC on your network. GeForce Now, I mean, both of them have been good. I would say that Moonlight has been incredible and GeForce Now has been good. GeForce Now, the problem is that it's still a web app on the iPad. Even though Apple recently sort of changed their stance on allowing game streaming services on the App Store, NVIDIA still hasn't made GeForce Now an actual native app that you can download from the App Store. You still need to go through Safari and install it as a web app on your home screen. And by doing that, you run into these limitations of web apps, which means, for example, no HDR, no 4K, and you can play with the controller, so that's nice, but you are severely limited in terms of bandwidth and image quality that you can receive. Mm-hmm. So for example, playing Dragon's Dogma, I cannot go above 1600 by 900. Like, it's not even 1440p, for example, like, let alone 4K. And there's no HDR. So like, it's fine, and it works. I mean, especially if you're a member of the GeForce Now Ultimate tier, they now have a bunch of RTX 4080 GPUs in the cloud. So the game looks absolutely fantastic, and you can enable ray tracing, for example. Like, it totally works. And that is, of course, provided that you have a good Wi-Fi setup at home. I did my tests, as I mentioned, with my Asus 6E routers and the M4 iPad Pro. So, I hope that NVIDIA, now that it's allowed, I hope they make a native web app for GeForce Now, because at that point, you will be able to stream at 4K HDR, you know, do whatever you want. I have been absolutely stunned by the performance of Moonlight. So Moonlight is this client app that you install on your iPad. They have apps available everywhere. Like, you can get it on Android, you can get it on a Mac, whatever you want. There's even, Shahid, there's even folks who have backported Moonlight to the PS Vita. So there's some diehards out there streaming PC games to their PS Vitas in 2024. And Moonlight is the app that you put on your iPad. And on a gaming PC, there used to be years ago a technology called NVIDIA Game Stream. NVIDIA discontinued this technology. And that's where an independent developer came along and made a new version called Sunshine. So you have that nice combo of Sunshine and Moonlight on your iPad. You install Sunshine as a server on your gaming PC, and you install Moonlight as the client on the screen you want to stream games. And I've been streaming 4K HDR 120 frames per second from my gaming PC to the iPad Pro, and it looks incredible. On my network, I have my gaming PC hooked up via Ethernet, and I have obviously the iPad Pro going to Wi-Fi 6E. I get less than 5 millisecond latency. So it's basically unnoticeable. I've been playing Hades 2, for example, which is a pretty fast-paced game. It looks incredible. Been playing Dragon's Dogma at 4K. It just, on the OLED display of the iPad Pro, it looks wild. And to prove a point in my article, I wanted to compare the performance of the iPad Pro with the Legion Go, which is the handheld, the PC handheld that I have left because I sold everything else. And just for this story, I got, and I'm returning, of course, a Logitech G Cloud.
Right.
Now, this is a streaming-specific handheld. It's got really bare-bones specs. It's got an old, like a very old Snapdragon chipset inside. Mm-hmm. And it's basically dedicated to streaming. GeForce Now, Xbox Cloud, PlayStation Remote Play, and Moonlight. The iPad Pro absolutely destroyed both of them. Like, the G Cloud was the worst of all of them. It's sold as a streaming device. It doesn't even come with Wi-Fi 6. It's got Wi-Fi 5 inside. And especially if you want to stream these modern games, like even at 1080p, it was struggling and dropping.
I have Wi-Fi 6 devices.
Yeah.
And like, it made like the, with the Portal, it was just unplayable.
Yeah. 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 So I really do think that for like the optimal baseline for streaming right now is 60.
Okay.
Because of you get the 6 gigahertz band like that is just freed up for your 60 devices. So basically right now at home I have my gaming PC going via Ethernet, and it's just my iPhone and my iPad on the 6E channel. And like, that is an optimal situation.
And I mean, this is obvious, but just in case anybody wants help following along, with the Moonlight and Sunlight, was it, did you say?
Sunshine.
What's happening is one app is running on your PC.
Yep.
And so the game is being played on the PC and the video and is being streamed to the device.
Yeah.
And the controller is attached to the device directly.
Yes.
And is then transmitting the controls back to the PC.
Yeah. And if you can get to a point where you have less than 5 millisecond latency, that is effectively, it feels like actually playing the game on your remote device.
That's crazy.
It's wild. That is the feeling that I got testing streaming on the iPad Pro. And yeah, so the G Cloud was actually pretty terrible. The Legion Go was okay. I was streaming at 1440p. Not 4K, in HDR. HDR doesn't actually matter that much for streaming quality. But it was still not as good as the iPad Pro. I mean, the iPad Pro, I was throwing 4K content at it and it just didn't care. Like 120 frames per second. Like, you get that combination of the promotion display and the tandem OLED display on the M4. It was great. I'm loving it. And I'm using this modded controller, of course. I had to take...
No way.
Of course. Well, look, it's not my fault that nobody is making controllers that you can attach to a 13-inch tablet.
Yeah, that is a shame. Like, the Razer Kishi that I use, you can put an iPad mini in it.
Yeah.
And that works. Yeah. Now, I would like to have something I could put my new 11-inch iPad Pro into.
So I took a Gamesir G8 controller, which is very easy to mod. You just need to open up the controller in the back, cut a little plastic ridge that basically stops the spring from extending, and that's it. You close it back up, and you can check out the photo in my article. When you attach the controller to the iPad Pro, if you look in the back, you can see the exposed springs.
Yes, it's freaky looking.
It's freaky looking, but it works. And I've been using it for like 3 months at this point. First with an 11-inch iPad Pro, now with the 13-inch, it's been perfect.
Yeah, I don't get why nobody's made
some
kind of controller for a 13-inch iPad, because that market must be enormous, right?
Wow.
I'll take it. I'll take it.
Shahid is he's been unleashed.
No, seriously. Fair enough. Why would you do? Why not just
the put market isn't up on enormous, a stand? But there is a market, right? Like there is actually that market is only going to get bigger now that there is an iPad Air at that size as well, right? That like more and more iPads than ever will be sold that will be of 13-inch size.
Look, we had this discussion in our last episode about what is the biggest thing that you would hold. And Federico very clearly said that is a Lenovo Legion Go would probably be at the limit. And now he's doing the equivalent of a trigger finger release surgery exercise on one of his existing controllers. Ah, it's broken, but it'll be fine. Just to be able to use an attached controller on a 13-inch screen?
But find me another 13-inch OLED display that is so light that you can hold in your hands.
You got me there. You got me there.
The things I do for OLED, you know, it's like, it's just, it looks amazing. That's, it's like holding a tiny television in your hands. Like, it's you're literally holding a 13-inch OLED display in your hands.
Mm.
Like,
no, I'm jesting. You know as well as I do that the first thing I'm going to do after we stop recording is text you for all of the details, because I'm going to do the same thing.
Yes. Yeah, it's fun. Yeah. Yeah, so I was really surprised by streaming those games. And in fact, like, this is even better. Months ago, I tried streaming these games to the Vision Pro, right? Mm-hmm. Because, like, if you think about it, oh, there's no better display than the Vision Pro. It's a giant display in front of your eyes. But then again, the problem is the Vision Pro's Wi-Fi performance, it kind of sucks because it's no Wi-Fi 6E, and it was like even streaming at 1080p was a struggle, pretty much like the Logitech G Cloud. Like at the moment, and I haven't tried with my iPhone. I suppose the iPhone will also get a better performance, but I think that it's the fact that the iPad Pro must have a much bigger Wi-Fi antenna, and that I think is the reason why it helps with reception compared to smaller devices.
Right. Talk me through this, because I want to do it, and I'm sure some of our listeners want to do this too.
Yeah.
So I've got a decent PC.
Yeah.
I need to install Sunshine.
Sunshine.
Right? Now, how does Sunshine access my Steam library?
Well, what Sunshine is doing is basically, think of it as, it doesn't access your Steam library. It just, it's like a fancier screen mirroring.
Right.
Think about it this way.
Right.
It's like VNC,
but
without quality loss.
Right. Okay.
That's what it is. It doesn't actually access your games. The one quirk that I should mention of Sunshine is that it's basically taking a display, like a physical display connected to your PC, and it's streaming that display. But this means that when I'm streaming games in my bedroom, if I go to my office, the display is turned on, right? The game is actually shown on the display. But it also happens that the display is being streamed to my iPad in the other room. There are workarounds to make sure that you can have the display turned off, like the physical display turned off while also streaming, but I didn't want to do it. You need to touch the Windows registry and that kind of stuff. That makes me go, no, I'm, you know, the display will turn on its own in the office and whatever. Like, I don't care. But yeah, it's basically fancy screen mirroring. It's not touching your games. It's not doing anything to your Steam library. You have plenty of options that you can configure. Like if you have multiple GPUs, for example, connected to your computer, you can say, hey, make sure that you're only streaming from this GPU. You can, if you have like 2-3 monitors attached to your PC, you can say, I want to stream specifically this monitor. Like, there's plenty of settings that you can configure. But even if you just, like, personally, I just left the default settings and it's been perfect.
So my issue is my monitor is 57 inches, 7680 by 2160. I don't want to be streaming that whole thing. So two questions. The first is, if I set the display resolution remotely to something reasonable, what's going to happen to the aspect ratio?
So I will point you to this third-party tool made specifically for Sunshine. It's called Resolution Automation. It's a tiny script that you need to run on your Windows PC. And what it does is, no matter the size of the monitor that you have, it will dynamically switch the resolution of the monitor to match the resolution of the Moonlight client that is connected. My God. And the moment you disconnect, the display goes back to the default resolution.
Oh my God, that is so beautiful. Is there anything you haven't thought of?
I do my research.
Federico, I feel like it's mostly Reddit, right? Is where you're getting a lot of this information.
Reddit, there's no greater value in humanity on the internet than Reddit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been that. Reddit and people just releasing open source projects.
But you find out about them from Reddit, though, right? Like, yes, that's where these communities are. Like, I know when you talk about your cables and all that kind of stuff, I assume a lot of that's coming from Reddit.
Yeah, for the cables, yeah, absolutely. Like, people on Reddit, there's some excellent communities on Reddit that I can point you to. Like, the eGPU subreddit is excellent. And there's, I believe, one called Cloudy Gamer, which is just people who stream video games, either from the cloud or locally. And I also, I believe there's one called Patient Gamers, which is people who decide now to play games from like 10 years ago. Like people who take their time to play games because maybe they couldn't when they came out. Patient Gamers. Like, yeah, there's some really... And of course, go check out Handhelds as a subreddit. Yeah, tons of really, really useful content on Reddit for this topic.
This episode is brought to you by porkbun.com, named the number one domain registrar by USA Today for both 2023 and 2024. Porkbun offers low prices on domains like .quest, .gg, .games, and more. They also offer powerful web hosting solutions, email hosting, and a link in bio tool as well. Every domain from Porkbun comes with a ton of freebies like SSL certificates, Whois privacy, URL forwarding, web and email hosting trials, and so much more. Because the folks at Porkbun don't believe that you should have to pay for things that should be free. And you'll be backed by personalized five-star support 365 days a year. Their support team is US-based, and you get to deal with a real person, not an automated system. Plus, Porkbun has a simple user interface. You can manage everything about your new domain from one place. Right now, Remaster listeners can get $1 off their next domain from Porkbun when they visit porkbun.com/remaster24. You can also click the link in our show notes or use the code remaster24 at checkout. That is porkbun.com/remaster24. To grab the domain name that you want and start sharing your passion. Our thanks to porkbun.com for their support of this show and Relay FM. Boys, it's about that time again. Summer Game Fest season. Officially, truly SGF season now, because the E3 is donezo.
Yeah.
But there are various other things that are going on, right? There are... there'll be Xbox Direct, and they're doing what is a thinly veiled Call of Duty Direct, which at the moment, like, I'm genuinely fascinated to try and understand and see how Xbox are going to be talking positively about their games after the closure of the studios that they've just put through. I have like a morbid curiosity in the Xbox Direct. I would have watched it anyway, and I want to see what the games are. But like, I'm really intrigued to see how, because like, I don't know how much you guys are following it, but like the general Xbox community is pretty upset right now. I think for good reason about kind of what's going on with their studios. But there's also, there is going to be a Nintendo Direct where Nintendo have now said, yes, we are building a Switch 2 and it will be out, I think, the next financial year is what they said. And there will be a Direct in the summer, and I think it said in June, but it will not feature anything about the Nintendo Direct, the Nintendo DS. Nintendo DS. The Nintendo DS 2, believe it or not, they're bringing it out. No, Nintendo Switch 2. It is... I appreciate that they'd said all this stuff so we can just stop thinking about it. And then there's also just going to be a bunch of games at SGF Kickoff Live or whatever it's going to be called this year. So I'm excited. I like this time of year. I think it's like a fun time. Lots of good showcases to watch. I love a good video game showcase. But I wanted to just kind of talk about and you know, be interested to hear from you guys too. Just a few games that I'm excited about to learn more about, that I'm confident I'm going to learn more about, and some games that I'm hoping to hear more about. Would you like my list?
Yes.
So, yes, please.
I'm kind of surprised that the first two games are Ubisoft games. Like, that is just interesting to me. But I'm very excited to know more about Star Wars Outlaws. I think last year was the first gameplay of that, which is their third-person Star Wars RPG game, looks like they're doing some unique stuff around the story of it. The gameplay looked pretty good. I think it's an Unreal Engine 5 game, but if not, it's a very good-looking video game from the action that they showed. I'm intrigued about that. What's the Star Wars games that came out by EA? The Jedi games.
Survivor.
Yeah. Something. Those games didn't gel with me. They're like Souls-like combat. I don't really want that. But I am intrigued about like an Ubisoft open world RPG game. Like that kind of game I have gotten on pretty well with in the past. And so I'm intrigued to see about that. I am more excited, though, about Assassin's Creed Shadows.
Yes, same.
The trailer for this game, it looks sick. Like, I'm really excited to see more about this game. All they've shown off is, like, the CGI trailer kind of thing. This game is interesting in mine and Federico's general community because it will be day and date released on Apple Silica Mac, which is just, like, insane. That a game is coming out on PC, PlayStation, Xbox, and the Mac on the same day?
Yeah.
An incredible achievement. Congratulations to everybody involved. This game, it looks really, really good. It's set in the best I'll say is in ancient Japan. I am honestly not sure of the exact time frame. I lean towards saying feudal, but I feel like people say feudal Japan for everything, and so I don't really want to get into that. But it actually follows some interesting history that I found out about. So there's two characters. I believe the one character called Neo, N-A-O-E, or like Neo, and then Yasuke, who is a black man in Japan as a warrior, and it's a true story. They are actually following a historical figure, Yasuke, who came from Africa and is like a legend in Japan because he was much bigger figure than the people that he was around and was feared. And like, so I'm intrigued. That's all I know about this guy right now. It's just like stuff I've heard from podcasts. I'm intrigued to learn more about this person. You play this game, I believe, as two, like, you know, you're playing as each character. I expect you're probably switching off one or the other. And the cinematic trailer looked amazing, and I want to learn more about this game because it looked really good fun.
Yeah, I believe I was just checking Wikipedia. This is the Sengoku period of Japan's history. Yeah.
See, I'm so happy I didn't just say the thing. You know, just like I'm just going to say it's old, but I don't know enough about it. But yeah, I'm really intrigued to know more about this game because the time period is really interesting. What I want is none of the modern day nonsense. That's what I want.
Didn't they say that it was going to be slightly smaller in scope than the previous ones and more in line with Origins?
Yes.
I think.
So that, like, I'm excited about too. Yeah. Slightly smaller scope. But I just don't want any of the, like, you're in modern day and your head's in a machine and you're jumping. Like, I don't want any of that. Like, I know that Mirage, the last game they put out, had none of that in it.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping for a bit of for that because I'm just not interested. But yeah, this game looks really cool. I want to learn more about it. What I am actually hoping for, though, even though I know that the Direct, they're saying there will be nothing about the Switch, I still am hopeful for something about the Switch 2 separately.
You think?
Over the summer period. No, I don't think.
You think?
I think we'll get this in November. I'm just going to put it out there because I want it. But I think kind of like October, November, and then it will be out like March of next year.
But boy, if they do that, they're going to destroy their holiday sales.
But will they, though?
I don't know.
Just drop the prices. There you go. At this point, also, I just don't think it matters to Nintendo.
To be fair, it is a 7-year-old console. Yeah,
I don't think it matters at this point. Like the thing I'm actually really intrigued is what the hell do they have left then? Like they're doing a Direct. Like what is it?
So I have a few theories.
All right.
My theory is that they're gonna fill the rest of the year with basically the few remakes and remasters that they haven't done still. There's a Wind Waker HD and Twilight Princess HD from the Wii U just hanging there, just waiting. And there's, of course, potentially remasters for Metroid Prime 2 and 3.
Well, and there's also Metroid Prime 4.
Well, yeah, but that's going to be a Switch 2 title for sure at this point. Like, I would be shocked if they actually do Metroid Prime 4 on the Switch 1 at this point.
Oh, I am convinced they will do Metroid Prime 4 on the original Switch. It's about whether it will be a bridge title or not. Yeah. Because they've had that. Like every major console has that, right? Like Breath of the Wild was on the Wii U. Yes. Twilight Princess was on the GameCube.
Yes.
So I imagine Metroid Prime 4 will be that, but it's whether it happens at the same time or not. And the reason I think that is because that you look at Nintendo, right? They said Metroid Prime 4 was going to be on the Nintendo Switch. It is rare that when they say something that they don't deliver on it.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
So my question is, does Metroid Prime 4 come out on the Nintendo Switch and then also become one of the, I expect, many games that gets a Switch 2 version? Or will they do Metroid Prime 4 as like one of the first Switch 2 games? But like for me, I don't think, like, so I've spent a lot of time thinking about this. I don't think that if they're going to do it, they should do Metroid Prime 4 on Switch 1 and then bring it to Switch 2 later. I don't think Metroid is a big enough game to be like a launch title toward the Switch 2.
No, probably
not. It may be in the lineup, and if it is, great. Along with like Mario Kart 9.
Yes. Right. Can you imagine that?
Like, which is definitely going to be a launch game. And that will be on Switch 2 only, I would expect. That's just going to be the interesting thing, too, right? Of like, what is the forwards, backwards compatibility like for these, for the Switch? I'm intrigued to know more about that. And there's two other games that I'm intrigued about. I want to see more about Indiana Jones and the Great Circle. I think that could be a good game later on in the year. And I really hope for some more information about Wolverine from Insomniac. Like, obviously, they had their big data leak, right? And a bunch of information got out. I would love it if this summer they took the story back, you know, and were able to, like, show Wolverine again, and it will probably come out next year. But, I mean, just in general, though, like, I would love to see more from PlayStation. I mean, a couple of days ago, I was at home and I just kind of like looked down underneath my TV and my PlayStation was there. And I was like, oh boy.
Yeah.
Like, I have not played many games on the PS5. Like,
I agree. Same.
And to be fair, there are games that I'm deciding to get on my Steam Deck instead, right? So like there would have been more games that I would have played on my PlayStation 5 had I not bought a Steam Deck, right? So like I know that it is my choice for like, you know, like the Formula One games, the WWE games, like all this like stuff that I play every year. I used to play them on PlayStation, but now I get them on Steam Deck. And for me, in general, getting the one or two truly top tier Sony games a year is fine, but I don't think we're gonna get any this year, right? Like is what's being said, and like that is a bit weird. Like it is a bit weird to me, but you know,
I have to believe that a lot of people, myself included, followed the exact same path over the past few years, where like a game comes out and you have to choose between getting it on a Steam Deck or any kind of PC handheld, or getting it for on a PS5. And of course, it's going to look much better on the PS5, but especially like a certain type of, let's just say, adult gamer who's, you know, strapped for gaming time must be thinking, hey, you know what, I'm just going to give up on graphics and I'm just going to play it on the Steam Deck because it's easier and I can play whenever, anywhere. So yeah, that's, I had this the exact same thought a few days ago of like, man, there's talk of a PS5 Pro happening later this year, and I feel like I've barely played with my PS5 over the past 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think there'll be a whole bunch of upgraded games to coincide with the launch of PS5 Pro.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I get that, but like, I have the PlayStation 5 now. You know, so like, I know how these things work and things don't always go the way you would plan. Da, 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 da. But like, just in general, this this generation has been a bit underwhelming, I think.
I think so, yeah.
Where like, we're probably halfway through and I feel like I have played one truly next generation video game, which was Spider-Man. Like,
yeah,
like that is the only game that I have played on the PlayStation 5, or the, you know, I have the Xbox Series S, but I'll say it as well, like the Xbox Series or the PlayStation, but the only game that I have played that truly feels like it could only have been made for this current generation of hardware is Spider-Man. And look, my hope is we got another 4 to 5 years where we're going to get a lot more of those games, but it's just like, it's just a shame that this year for PlayStation, like, For what I like on PlayStation, I should say, I don't really feel like I'm going to get any of it. You know, like, there are games that are exclusive. They're not PlayStation Studios necessarily, but exclusive. You know, like Helldivers, right? Oh, you're having a great time. You've got that. Like the Final Fantasy games, you're having a great time. But they're just not my thing. I like, you know, Spider-Man, you know, like what will be Wolverine, Last of Us, God of War, Horizon, like these types of video games.
You want the statement first party titles, don't
yes,
you?
Like what we've called before, like the cinema experience,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
And I just, I consider it a bummer that like, I'm not going to get any of those this year. And I genuinely feel like part of this is because Sony decided they wanted to go live service. Right, so they put a lot of their efforts into live service games, and that looks like it's kind of fallen apart a little bit. But then at the same time, they've got Helldivers, which is like crushing. But I feel like this like chop change of their strategy decisions over the last few years has kind of gotten us to a point where in the year 2024, we have no first party like big titles, and I consider that a bit of a disappointment, to be honest.
Yeah. Announced, we don't have, I think, anything at the
anything.
Moment.
I mean, I'm expecting there will be announcements this year. That's, and I'm genuinely expecting there will be announcements this year that I will be excited about. Like, that, like, okay, we'll let 2024 go because in 2025, there's going to be a bunch of stuff like Ghost of Tsushima 2. So maybe I'll try Ghost of Tsushima, which I know I'm going to have a terrible time with, but I'm going to give it a go anyway. Like, I'm intrigued about it. Maybe we'll get a date for Wolverine. Maybe we'll find out that like that Naughty Dog is working on something. Like, there is stuff that could happen within the next 6 to 12 months where I'm going to be like, excellent. But like right now, it's like, there are no games and I don't know that they're working on any. It's like, information, guys, would be great at this point, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot of stuff coming in, like GTA 6, man. Oh, boy.
Yes.
Boy, oh, boy. I mean, the rumors, though, is like it's late 2025, which is a shame.
2025 holiday season must be, I guess.
Which is a shame. Like, when they showed that trailer off, I was like, well, maybe it will be early 2025. But I think 2024 is going to be it's going to be a quieter year, which is fine because 2023 was, like, even when it was happening, like, this is unbeatable.
Yeah, I still have so many games from my 2023 backlog.
Yeah,
so,
me too. Which is, you know, that will be a nice thing in that regard to go back and play those. But it's looking like 25 will be bananas, right? Switch 2 and whatever the games that's going to be. GTA 6, and then at least one or two first party PlayStation. Like, you know, maybe this will just be a bit of a relief year, and then it won't matter. But I think the bigger thing for me with PlayStation is that it's not just that there are no games come out. It's like, as of the recording right now on the 21st of May, we have no idea what else they're working on that are considered those like top tier PlayStation experiences.
I mean, this has been a year of retrenchment, you know, with so many studio closures.
That's true.
So much of a correction to the industry, so many people uncertain. It's bound to affect a lot of the existing dates as well. That will mean a lot of re-strategizing around the studios they still have, and whether they launch certain titles or whether they decide to move resources to other titles they think are going to do better. And that, I think, has caused this 1 year interruption. And it's not just PlayStation. It's everywhere except Nintendo. I mean, Nintendo just carrying on their merry way, you know?
Can I just say one thing before we go?
Yeah.
So IGN, the website, has just acquired a bunch of websites. So IGN now owns... Get ready for this.
GamesIndustry.biz.
IGN now owns GameIndustry.biz, Eurogamer, Rock Paper Shotgun, FG247, and they hold shares in Nintendo Life and Digital Foundry. And I just wanted to say, Mike, have we been sold to IGN?
Also? I'll have to check.
Okay. Are we rich now?
It's not impossible. cool. I will actually say, I don't know about this news yet. You've just sprung this on me. I think this might not be a bad thing.
As long as these people keep their jobs.
Yes, provided that the jobs are kept. I can imagine a scenario where a lot of these publications could stay in business for longer.
Yeah.
Under a larger, like a bigger... Because in some of these scenarios, like with publishing, if you get a bigger pool together, you can better sell advertising, membership bundles, da-da-da-da-da. And a lot of these websites are websites I care about. GameIndustry.biz, Eurogamer, especially. Yeah. These are sites that I really value and I visit them. And I think IGN appears to be doing great stuff. I mean, they just recently, the staff unionized and they were basically immediately recognized. So there was also some layoffs that happened, but layoffs always happen. But anyway, like there are at least green shoots there. And for as tough as it is in gaming, it's also as tough in gaming media from the stuff that, like, the impressions that I get. I really hope that this is good news. But on the face of it, it seems like at least we could be hopeful. But I'll double check to make sure if this show is part of IGN.
Yeah. Okay.